Clubland Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. October 16th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in Jerusalem, 10:30 p.m. in Tehran, for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone. Midnight 45 in Kathmandu, for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers. 6 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. 8 a.m. in Auckland. And a rather more convivial hour for the kippers and kedgeri in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 60 years ago today, October 16th, 1964, the People's Republic of China successfully detonated its first nuclear weapon and thus became the world's fifth nuclear power after the US, UK, France, and the Soviet Union. In nearby Japan, where they were in the middle of the Olympic Games, there was widespread panic over fears of radiation. 51 years ago today, this is really just for me, October 16th, 1973, Richard Attenborough welcomed Londoners to the first day of Capital Radio. Such a cool station back then, very stylish, and with a rather starry board of directors, not just Darling Dickie, but Beatles producer George Martin, Brian Forbes, director of The Stepford Wives, Peter Saunders, producer of The Mousetrap, Norton Natchbull, who's now the third Earl Mountbatten of Burma. His grandfather and several other members of his family were blown up on that boat off Mullach Moor in Ireland. But he's not just famous for having a family who lost an awful lot of members to the IRA. He also worked on Darling Dickie's film, A Bridge Too Far. I still see quite a few folks from those days. In fact, I saw one in Worcestershire just last month. And then there's Tim Rice, whom you hear and see on our music shows fairly regularly. Tim had a Saturday lunchtime show back then. And Sue Cook. Dear Sue Cook, who was a regular on my pre-heart attacks telly show. It was just a fabulous station in its first couple of years with a great launch team. They are still finding corpses in North Carolina and no one in the corrupt American media want to talk about them because it's not helpful to the Kamala Harris campaign. We have breaking news courtesy of Robert McBurney. Never heard of him? Well, he's a judge of the Superior Court of Fulton County, Georgia, and he's just struck down the state legislature's law requiring all ballots to be hand counted. So the season of shenanigans is officially underway. Okay, let's get to your questions. Teresa Maupin, I hope I've pronounced that correctly. It might be Teresa Maupin, but I'll go with the French way. Teresa Maupin. If everything about the election campaign is fake, why shouldn't the result be? This is a line I used this morning. And Teresa says, yep, it's so obvious. For Democrats, this election season is the template for fake. For Republicans, it's as close to genuine as they've ever gotten. Yeah, it's interesting. I forget what it was. Various aspects of things. It's like Tim Walz is fake, right? The official version of Tim Walz is that he's some kind of battle-scarred war hero. Kamala Harris is completely fake. Nobody actually knows what the official version of Kamala Harris is supposed to be. That's because, you know, she's not running as what she is, a Montreal schoolgirl, but she can't. And in fact, that's a bit unfair to Montreal schoolgirls because the average Montreal schoolgirl knows exactly what they are. But there is, as everyone is recycling the old Oakland line, you know, there's no there there. So Tim Walz is false. Tim Walz is fake. She's fake. The audience at Kamala events is fake. They were supposed to be randomly selected undecided voters at that Univision town hall. In fact, half of them were hardcore Kamala fans who were permitted to submit their questions in advance so she could practice her answers in front of the mirror. And then the other half are from a company that specializes in providing audiences for people who can't attract any. So we're supposed to believe that the vice presidential candidate is fake, the presidential candidate is fake, the audience is fake, but that somehow the vote will be the one aspect of this appalling, awful, tedious, clapped-out wanker charade, or charade for you non-Americans, that will be the one aspect of this interminable two-year election process in which she's parachuted in 10 minutes before the end, that the vote will be the one aspect of this that is not fake. I don't think so. And I tell you, I'll just to get it out there, I think one of the most interesting things is the behavior of the court eunuchs, as I've always called them from the mainstream American media. It's not just Univision agreeing to provide Kamala Harris with a teleprompter to read her answers from. It accidentally got in shot. Because the director wasn't skilled enough to keep it out of shot. And obviously someone yelled at him, cut, go to camera three or whatever, and take the teleprompter out of shot. And then we have this business where CBS News, the so-called Tiffany Network, which I always thought was total bollocks, but it's been called the Tiffany Network for decades. CBS News is 95 years old. It's the network of Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite. And what they're doing is they're editing Kamala Harris's answers to make them make sense. So they take out the word salad and they replace it with 20 seconds of something else. But the 20 seconds of something else was her answer to an entirely different question. And I find this fascinating because they seem to have concluded that, in fact, regardless of who people vote for, the Democrats are going to be winning this election, and that therefore it's perfectly safe to do this, and indeed it's necessary to do this, because you want to make sure that you come out on the right side of all this rubbish. So, like I said this morning, if everything about the election campaign is fake, why shouldn't the result be? Christopher Gelber explores that point. Mark, all the political pundits are waxing excitedly every day about poll numbers and trends here, there, and everywhere. Well, in the seven swing states anyway. Yeah, who, and these, for months now, I've been doing the joke about who's 2 points up in Iowa, but this isn't even about that. This is about who's 0.3 of a point up in Pennsylvania. And Christopher says, but even those irate, like Megyn Kelly, Depressed Ginger, Robert Barnes, and others, don't engage with the obvious fact that there really is a margin of steel, as you put it so well 4 years ago. I know YouTube's algorithms would shut down podcasts which speak freely on this, but nobody is even hypothesizing about Dem operatives loading up warehouses in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia et al., with boxes of blank ballot forms with ticks against Harris and nothing down ticket, ballots we all know won't be audited. I'm very worried about the sheer scale on which this may be being done. What is the margin of steel in 2024, I wonder? Surely a lot higher than it was in 2020. And what has the GOP done about it the last 4 years? Well, the answer to that is nothing, really. As we're seeing, they're also up against these, even if the legislature passes something. And by the way, the legislature is, you know, this thing that you guys like to wave, this constitution of yours? The legislature is specifically delineated in that mouldering piece of parchment as being responsible for determining the conduct, the state legislatures determining the conduct of the election. But funnily enough, now it's rinky-dink district court judges who decide whether or not they like it and strike down, if they don't, what the legislature has passed. Now, you ask what the margin of steel is this year and suggest it's higher than it was in 2020. We were told in 2020 that, memory serves, it's either 3 points or 5 points, that a Republican had to be five, this is Pennsylvania, had to be either 3 points or 5 points ahead not to have his election stolen from him by the Democrats. So the question you have to ask yourself is, are the Democrats willing just to go back to having free and fair elections like they have in, you know, Botswana or Kenya? Or do they think 2020 was pretty swell and that's the model they're going for? And as I said, the behavior of CBS News and other similar outlets suggests that they think the Democrats are going to be stealing this thing. That's just my two bits. Elisa Angel writes, Mark, oh my goodness. I can't believe. Could you explain what today's story about Jacinda Ardern receiving a damehood by Prince William at Windsor Castle means? Isn't it the same honour that she got from King Charles in 2023? Is it breaking news or follow-up news from last year? If you haven't seen this, this is the Prince of Wales, Prince William, getting all very cuddly with Dame Jacinda, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, at Windsor today, in which, as it's put rather carelessly in the papers, she was made a dame. Now, that's not true. Generally speaking, in most of His Majesty's dominions, The national honours are awarded on New Year and on the King's official birthday, which can vary from realm to realm. And there's a couple of exceptions to that. The Order of Canada is handed out on the national holiday, July the 1st, and the same thing with the Order of Australia. But generally speaking, you can only become, as in the case of Jacinda, you can only be elevated on New Year or on the King's official birthday. And she became a dame of His Majesty's most noble, what's the thing called? The New Zealand Order of Merit, a dame of the New Zealand Order of Merit. And that's the point at which you become a dame. And because, you know, a lot of people get their honours on one of those 2 days, they then don't have the investiture, as they call it, has to be staggered through the rest of the year. Otherwise, there'd just be untold thousands of them showing up at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle, or some of the lower ones you get inaugurated by, well, as in this case, not by the King, but by the Prince of Wales or by one of His Majesty's viceroys. And in the case of my dear friend George Jonas, he was so sick when he was inducted into the Order of Canada that the Governor General made a trip to his house in Toronto to invest him because he wasn't able to leave the house by then. So that's all that's happened here. She's not getting another gong. The only significance to the story is the weird and creepy coziness. Now, she sits on the board of one of his, whatever it is, some climate change thing that William's got going. But it was sort of, I don't think anyone, I mean, I remember when I was a schoolboy and on the school bus, there were a couple of people. There was a boy and a girl who liked to make out on the back seat for the duration of the school bus journey, and nobody liked it because they were the two people in the school you least wanted to see making out. And that's... And I hadn't thought about that for 120 years until I saw William and Jacinda today. So... It's not breaking news, except in its creepiness, Elisa. That's all I have to say about that. Eric Dale says, Mark and fellow club members, what are your thoughts on Biden's statement that an Iranian assassination of President Trump would be an act of war, given the obvious security lapses over the past couple of months? Oh, by the way, just I'll get to this, Eric, but I just want to add one final, one sort of postscript to what we were saying. I mean, I guess unless you follow New Zealand orders of knighthood and such, the fact that Jacinda is now a dame of the King's New Zealand Order of Merit isn't a big deal to you. But I am astonished at how weakened. I never thought he would be a great king, but I am astonished at how weakened the institution has been in the 2 years since he succeeded to the throne. And the fact that chaps who used to behave, who seemed to have an instinctive sense of how far they could go and no further, like Prince William, since Granny died, they're letting it all hang out. And that's not going to go well for them. I think... I think actually the 1,000-year institution has been imperiled by the way these guys are carrying on. Eric Dale continues, what are your thoughts on Biden's statement that an Iranian assassination of Trump would be an act of war? Given the obvious security lapses over the past couple of months, it seems an Iranian agent could take a plausible shot at it. Do you think Iran would actually do it if given the opportunity? Or would that be giving the deep state a two-for-one gift in removing Trump while giving them the war with Iran so many have been agitating for? Indeed, how would the US military in its current state actually fare if that war were to happen? Well, that last question is the easiest one to answer, Eric. They would lose. The US military would lose. It is now an entirely dysfunctional institution. And the idea that it could successfully prosecute a war, it took 20 years to lose to the goat herds with fertilizer and to gift them as you scuttle out of town with enough hardware to make them one of the 8th or 9th most powerful militaries on the planet. How do you think they're going to do against a nation that is not at the goat herds with fertilizer stage? I think the Pentagon. I say the Pentagon because I distinguish between the world's worst officer class and the poor bloody infantry in the field who are on the sharp end of the incompetence and corruption. And that's basically what it is. It's not just. The actual poor bloody infantry, it doesn't make much difference. They'll use whatever's to hand. So it's Americans in Afghanistan and it's Ukrainians in Ukraine. But they don't really care because they've got all their little scams going on. That idiot Milley, thoroughly modern Milley. I can't understand how anybody takes that guy seriously. What is up with the veneration of people? You look at all the medals down his chest and you'd think he'd won every war going back to the Hundred Years' War. He hasn't won anything. What's he got those medals for? It's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. The wanker cons. Oh, thank you for your service. We support our troops and all that. There's a huge... They can't win anything. They account for 40% of the planet's entire military budget, entire planet-wide military spending. These guys spend 40% and they can't win nothing. And they haven't won nothing since VJ Day, to be technical. And yet the wanker cons, oh, thank you for your service, we support our troops, think it's enough. It's the same thing with the Constitution waving. At some point, it's the fetishization thing has got to stop. They've been completely hollowed out. This business about all the wokery at West Point makes you understand why they can't. Anyway, I take it, the fact that it's the last question, it's... but they'll lose. And, you know, it's just a question of which allies they screw over in the losing of the war. You know, so who's going to be this season's South Vietnamese? That's what it's about. Get real, you wanker cons. How many wars does this dirty, rotten, corrupt military have to lose before you actually get serious about fighting war? But anyway, as I said, that was an aside from Eric Dale, and he's really talking about Biden anticipating an Iranian assassination attempt on Trump, and you know, they might have been able to pull it off with that Afghan that they the CIA employed Afghan who was arrested for plotting some election day terror attack. I don't know what the point of that. I think he was in California. Well, you know, everyone in California does the mail-in ballot 8 months before election day. So I don't know who he thinks is going to be out on the streets on election day. But anyway, setting that aside, They're now trying to make out that this guy, who his only known affiliation right now is the CIA. That's the only thing he's got the pay stubs for. But they're trying to make out. Sorry, I'm finding it very hard to take the great Satan seriously today for some reason. His only proven affiliation is with the CIA. But they're trying to make out that he's, you know, some ISIS guy in deep cover. That's brilliant cover. Oh, yes, yes, I'm ISIS, but I'm going to work for the CIA. They never check anything. So that guy, if they had decided that, if they had wanted to, let's say he had pulled off his terror attack, I don't think they'd have had any difficulty in framing that as the work of the mullahs in Tehran. So it would be absolutely perfect for them. If there were some guy of a generally Mohammedan disposition who took out Trump, because it would relieve them of the Trump problem, but at the same time, they could use it to pin it on Iran or whatever they want to do next to crank up the war, because Ukraine's going to be running out of menfolk soon. You know, they're conscripting sick 40 somethings. So they're going to be running out of men. All the guys in the Ukrainian army are going to be in the same shape as Jimmy Carter pretty soon. So if they want to keep the war racket going, they're going to need something like this. But I think their principal thing is that the point is to take out Trump, and it's a bonus if the guy they can pin it on also serves their purpose. Peter says, "Greetings, Mark. When plagiarizing parts of her book, Karbala Harris copied inter alia from Wikipedia like a middle school slacker. When casting for her regular Joe I Eat Carburettors for Breakfast skit, she used the available understudies for Queer Eye. Queer Eye for the straight guy. My question is this: shouldn't this total lack of effort in fakery be disqualifying?" Not necessarily. I mean, that's the point, isn't it? You're making the point that if Kamala Harris was a really first class plagiarist, she'd have plagiarized some obscure academic treatise on crime that only 300 people in the world had ever read or heard of. Instead, she just goes to Wikipedia and cuts and pastes from there. I think that's a sign of confidence, and also I think it's there. Well, what all these things have in common, and this is why these, if you listen to certain American talk radio pundits and the like, oh, this is complete hypocrisy. You know, CBS News would never accept this from a Republican, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's true. That's the point they're making. They're teaching you that the rules do not apply to them, which is the hallmark of ruling elites down the millennia. So she's saying, yeah, there's no point you complaining that Ted Cruz couldn't get away with cutting and pasting from Wikipedia. I'm doing that. It's the old Soviet thing. They didn't care how unconvincing the lies were. The point was to make you accept the lie, to make you live with the lie, because that way you're learning what your status in this new society that they're building for us is going to be. And that's the point of it. She doesn't need to go beyond Wikipedia. She really doesn't. She's just putting it out there. And if someone happens to stumble across it, so what? What's she going to do about it? you know, her publisher is doubling down on this. They're not announcing that they're pulping the book or anything like that. I don't even know why people think that's... there's no secret about this. They're actually telling you every day that the rules are different for them. And that's why, as I said, the big question is, oh, will that apply to, 10 o'clock at night on the first Tuesday in November as well? Well, what do you think? Doug Cole says, I am newish to all this Clubland Q&A in terms of asking questions. But mine is, given that Kamala spent much of her formative years playing the role of a schoolgirl in Canada, why does the US media never mention that US citizens and non-citizens are about to cast their vote for US president for a subject of the crown? Well, I've done my best, Doug. I've done my best since 2008, right? We have the first major party African-American nominee in Barack Obama. And he's a British subject. And I only liked it when it's very sympathetic to chaps like Jesse Jackson, who, you know, whatever you think of Jesse Jackson, he's put in decades of like advancing his own cause, because he's basically president for life of the Republic of himself. He certainly was in those days. And then this guy whose book publicist says he was born in Kenya, and whether he was born in Kenya, the only difference is in which particular category of British nationality he belongs to. But he's certainly a British national, Obama. He was born a British national. I couldn't understand why actual American blacks aren't upset about this. You know, you do all your I Have a Dream and you don't want to sit in the back of the bus and all the rest of it. And then some guy who leads a charmed life from colonial Kenya, from a big shot political family in Kenya, just sort of swans in and whisks the presidential nomination right out from under you. And I've sympathized with Jesse Jackson when he was caught on mic saying, I'd like to cut the guy's nuts off. And then he made that upward stabbing motion with an imaginary dagger. I rather sympathized with the Reverend Jackson at that point. Now we've done it again, you know, not to go all Lady Bracknell on you. But to nominate one black British subject for the presidency might be a misfortune. When it's a second one, it looks a bit like carelessness. Why does nobody, no black citizen of America whose family have lived the black experience in America, get to actually run for president? Why does it have to be Obama and Kamala? And as I said, I made this point in 2008. I made it again with when Kamala was running in 2020. And American blacks seem very quiescent on this point. That's all I'll say on that point. Frank Gallenstein or Gallenstein, I'm not sure which, but either way is fine by me, says, so here we go again. Pennsylvania forbids the pre-processing of mail-in ballots. Officials are only permitted to handle them the morning of Election Day. What possible reason, other than nefarious, would a legislature stop the pre-processing of the mail-in ballots? I have no idea. I don't think you should ask me this question, because to put it in the big picture terms, I put it in at Hillsdale's post-Constitution Day conference in DC a couple of weeks back. There's no point having the best constitution in the world if you have the worst election system in the world, certainly in the developed world and in about half the developing world as well. And there are, you know, again, it's about conditioning. And as you know, a good half of the country has been conditioned into thinking what is weird is entirely normal. So that Pennsylvania is among the states that has told, oh, there's no possibility of us knowing the result on election day. That's your reason right there, by the way. The later they start counting, if they were allowed to, you know, according to the city, I think the city of Detroit in Michigan, 40% of the mail-in ballots that they sent out have already been returned, and it's 3 weeks till election day. So they could count that 40%, and they'd be all up to speed, and then, you know, presuming the other 60% come in the next 48 hours, they'd have counted all the mail-in ballots, and that would be the baseline to work with on election day itself, November the 5th. But they don't do that because, you know, then that's the reason you go to sleep at 10 o'clock on election night, and Trump has a 50,000 vote lead in that particular state. And then you wake up in the morning and suddenly he's 2 million votes behind. Now, the reason that's part of this fakery of deliberately extending elections. Oh, yes. So once we've had all the people who come in on election day and vote, then we turn our attention to all the mail-in votes. And that's why we won't know who's won this state for at least 2 weeks. Why do you put up with it? Why does the Republican Party put up with it? Why does anybody? Why are people so... You can say what you like. You can do all the standard, oh, the French are the cheese-eating surrender monkeys and Canada is America's hat. You can do all the other lines. But the fact is, and, you know, I understand France is like an obscure third world country not a lot of people have heard of. But Canada is America's hat. It's right on the top of America. So just, you know, for in states like Michigan, you don't have to go very far to discover. In fact, you can pick up Canadian channels on your television set in that state. And you'll see that when they hold an election, the polls close at 7 o'clock or whatever. And unless it's particularly tight and the parliamentary arithmetic is getting complicated, they can tell you who won by 10 p.m. It's not difficult. But the Democrats, mostly with the acquiescence of the awful Republican Party, have taught Americans over several cycles now to accept this bollocks that a first world jurisdiction can't tell you who won the election until, you know, 10 days, 3 weeks, or like that New York congressional district, 3 months. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. Stop, put down that constitution. The constitution's irrelevant. No point having the best constitution in the world if you have the lousiest election system. That's unfortunately the reality. Let's see what else we got here, because I don't want to just be insulting the U.S. election system. Tom Osterman says, Mark, not to rain on your civilizational collapse vibe, but the cheering of SpaceX's engineers for the successful capture of the booster by Mechzilla left me with the feeling that maybe Western civilization isn't dead yet. Thoughts? Mechzilla, this is this thing where Elon Musk's spaceship came back. And the booster rocket, which normally you have to write off, instead was, he's got these sort of pincers that capture it, so you can use it again. And they never thought about that all during the time Apollo was heading off to the moon. They never came up with anything like that, and Elon Musk has. And Tom Osterman suggests that maybe Western civilization isn't completely dead yet. Well, that would make perfect sense if Elon Musk weren't the most hated man by the American establishment. And one, as he said to, was it to Tucker or to Trump or somebody a couple of weeks back? You know, if Kamala and Tim Walz win the election, they're going to try and put him in jail. That's the same thing in the European Union. The European Union wants to get Elon Musk. Because the point is, as we've just seen with CBS News, a real journalist takes an answer you gave 20 minutes ago and applies it to the question they asked 2 minutes ago, or like they did with the Speaker of the House. Oh, same thing, CBS News. They just, she asked the question, they cut out the 5 minute answer he gives to the question, which makes it look as if he's dodging the question. And that's the kind of world they want. So they don't want a totally unregulated free-for-all like Twitter under Elon Musk. So if Elon Musk is the only exemplar of a vigorous, innovative West, as Tom puts it in his question, they're going to take care of that problem, early January at the latest. He is a brilliant man. I think one of the reasons he's, and I don't agree with him on a lot of things, and I've no desire to go to Mars or drive an electric vehicle or any of these other things. But one of the reasons I think he's done so well is he has not been raised within the cocoon of the American elite, which is what it is now. One reason you know they're so out of touch is when you look at examples of them trying to get in touch. You know, so like the transgender bathroom guy wants to show that he's a big Second Amendment guy, you know, or, you know, the reach out to men in the men, real men. I'm a man. I'm a real man. I'm not afraid to tinker with a carburetor because I eat carburetors for lunch. I fix my carburetor while I'm in the cuck chair watching my wife with the pool boy. That's how much of a man I am. So we got this ridiculous thing. You know how out of touch they are every time. It's like me, the effete Nancy Boy Canadian show tunes guy. I could do a butcher job of pretending to be a real man. Okay, Kamala, next time call me for the new ad in 3 days' time or whatever. This, you know how cocooned they are. And whatever you say about Elon Musk, because he's South African, one thing you understand about South Africa is, if you're in South Africa, you get that there's a lot more to it than the version you get whenever it's mentioned on the news. In other words, he doesn't, you know, Elon Musk grew up with a foot in a much darker reality. And I'm not just talking about the time he spent in Canada. sorry, I'm basically just tittering to myself on this show. But no, I think that was an absolutely brilliant thing he did. The point is, they want to put him in jail, and very quickly. Toby Pilling has something to say on that too. He goes, do you think your last photocopier in the woods might have to be located on planet Mars? Hopefully Musk can succeed in his colonization attempts, as I fear Earth will soon provide no refuge for the right thinking among us. It's very true that if you're thinking of scramming for the exits, there are not a lot of places to go. If you're talking about somewhere that is basically part of the Euro-American world, it's Central and Eastern Europe. Even people who say, oh, yeah, well, I'm thinking of scramming to New Zealand, you know, you'll just be at the mercy of whoever Dame Jacinda's even crazier successor is down there. But that's basically, you know, what's going on. He's a unique, innovative guy, and so what? And he's committed to core Western principles like free speech, and at the same time, he's actually doing stuff. He's juggling with space rockets, which would be great if you were watching it on some TV variety show or at your local theater. Oh, he's done it with one. He got one space rocket perfectly. Now he's going to try it with two or three, like the jugglers do. And at the same time, he's reviled, and a no-talent bozo like Tampon Tim is regarded as some fantastic heroic figure. That's completely ridiculous. This is Stein Online's Clubland Q&A live around the planet. Oh, look what we got next. Here's Mark Stein. Don't know whether you know him, but he's going to tell you all about our weekend music show. This is Mark Stein. On this week's show, we have some curios from the 007 songbook. What's the connection between James Bond and Hoagie Carmichael? What's the connection between James Bond and the floral dance? And we'll live You Only Live Twice, twice. Mark Stein on the town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. And Saturday at 5, London time, is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or midday North American Eastern Time. And I hope you'll find time to join me for that, because it should be fun. This is Mark Stein live around the planet. It's 4:15 Eastern. That's 9:15 British Summer Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Kyle Ryder says, the prominent Canadian journalist Robert Fulford just died at 92. I wonder if you had any dealings with him in the tiny world of Canadian arts and letters. It's not that tiny, is it? Is it just, should it really be Canadian arts and letters? Should just really be singular, Canadian art and letter? That's how small it is. Anyway, Kyle says, like your friend Andrew Coyne, he was the soul of moderation until Donald Trump appeared in politics, and then they both went nuts. Yeah, it's a funny thing that, because it's weird, actually, that a personality can so revolt, apparently, sane people. Same thing with Lionel Shriver, really. Lionel, as you know, you've seen her on our show, and she writes in The Spectator, 99, she's defending Amy Wax, the University of Pennsylvania professor, who's in big trouble with her employers for raising awkward facts about race and such like. And yet, you know, she doesn't like Donald Trump. I've said this before, that she doesn't like Donald Trump because he doesn't talk in complete sentences. He has a voice of his own. In other words, because if you're, you know, writing a play, one of the most difficult things is, if you're just starting off and writing your first play, is trying to avoid all the characters talking like you. And Trump, and I shouldn't have to explain this to a big-selling novelist like Lionel, but Trump talks like a great character in a book. That's all. Otherwise, he'd just, you know, he'd talk like Keir Starmer or whoever, and he'd be totally boring. So she should appreciate that. But you mentioned Robert Fulford, who just died, and the last time I mentioned when George Jonas was dying, and the Governor General came round to induct him into the Order of Canada, and that wasn't the only visitors paying court on him. We had a sort of farewell for George at his house in Toronto. And as you say, the tiny world of Canadian arts and letters is so tiny it was able to fit into George Jonas's house. And that was the last time I saw Bob Fulford. He was a brilliant writer. I'll tell you why we got on. Because I don't know, this must be 20, maybe longer, 20 years ago, maybe longer. But Bob had gone into, Bob had a slightly similar background to me. He was at high school. I don't believe he ever graduated from high school, because at 16, at the age of 16, he got a gig on CFRB, which was the most listened to radio station in Canada at that time, in Toronto. And so he was enjoying that so much. He never looked. So he was a great cultured, literary, artistic man. But that not because he'd got a degree in creative writing from Dead Moose Junction Community College or whatever. He was self-taught. And I related to that when we were talking about our early years. And then I related to it all over again, because he left the Globe and Mail and joined the National Post because some half-wit sub-editor had changed. He'd said, and then as Hemingway said, and the sub-editor had changed it to as Mr. Hemingway said, which, you know, was the Globe and Mail's house style or whatever. And Bob thought it wrecked the rhythm of the sentence, and writing is about rhythm. So if you do all the things that the New York Times, one reason why the New York Times is completely unreadable is because they do things like that, and they put all these speed bumps in your prose. So if you say he wrote a rather Dickensian novel, the New York Times sub-editor changes it to he wrote a novel, comma, the name for a work of fiction, comma, in the style of Charles Dickens, comma, the 19th century English novelist. And if you do that on the scale the New York Times or even the Globe and Mail does it, you kill the writing. P.G. Woodhouse on House Style is very funny about this. And a few years back, Jonathan Kay, who Canadians will certainly know, I'd made a reference to the old joke. Other than that, how did you enjoy the play, Mrs. Lincoln? And Jonathan Kay, who chanced to be sub-editing my column because the regular editor was away that day, changed it to, other than that, how did you enjoy the play, Ms. Lincoln? Because their style, which I never accepted anyway, and I wasn't bound by, and in fact, I had a contract saying I didn't have to be bound by it, was to change the names of all women, Miss or Mrs., to Ms. So how did you enjoy the play, Ms. Lincoln? Because that's really what you'd say to a 19th century first lady in Washington, D.C. So I love the way Bob just quit the Globe and Mail and principle in that. He was a beautiful writer. He wanted to profile me in Toronto. Well, he did profile me, but without my cooperation, because I didn't feel it would be. He did a big profile of me in Toronto Life, and I don't remember much about it, but I accept that he'd read me in the Canadian papers, in the UK papers, in the American papers, and so he was a bit puzzled as to how I could get away with passing myself off as someone who knew the score in all these different markets. And he this must probably the 2000 election, but I'd been stuck in my small town in New Hampshire, been put in charge of organizing Old Home Day, which is a New Hampshire thing. Old Home Day in the summer. And don't, if you're in New Hampshire and someone asks you to organize Old Home Day, don't whatever you do, say yes. It's a nightmare. It's murder. Anyway, there was some pressure from some of the sort of more political kind of people who wanted to have it must be 2000 because there were primary candidates around, and they wanted to have the primary candidates participating in Hold Home Day. I remember there was Dan Quayle, there was Gary Bauer, there was, I can't remember all the others now. They all come and go, don't they? Strange that. But anyway, I was very opposed to it. I thought it would lower the tone. And I remember saying, no, we're not having Dan Quayle. That would just completely lower the tone of the Greased Pig Race. And I think that's right. You know, you've got to know where politics comes in the scheme of things. And it would have lowered the tone of the Greased Pig Race. Anyway, I remember Bob being very struck by that. He wasn't a conservative. The whole Trump thing is irrelevant, really. He was just on the human side of what was then mainstream liberalism. So that he read me, not because he agreed with me, but just because he liked the way I wrote. And he was also a cultured man. He was better than any other commentator of his generation at understanding how culture impacts a society far more than whoever's 2 points up in Iowa or whatever. So I shall miss Bob. He had a grand run, and I thought he'd make it to his century, and I'm a bit sorry that the last time I saw him was when we paid court at George Jonas's deathbed just a couple of years ago now. But he was a great man, and he was fun on that kind of stuff. He was on the right end of liberalism, you know, in the way that someone, I guess, RFK Jr. is, although a lot of those people, or Naomi Wolf turned out to be, or various other people. So we shall see. David Elstrom says, I happen to note this further evidence of the malicious nature of leftist elites. Devastating new study. These things come out, they're like running at three a day now, because when I started questioning this, you know where this is going, it's the COVID vaccines. When I started questioning them, people go, oh, pay no attention to him, he hasn't published any peer-reviewed studies. Well, the peer-reviewed studies are, there's a torrent, there's a Niagara of peer-reviewed studies now. Devastating new study further establishes COVID shot myocarditis in kids. And this email from David Elstrom says, hopefully all of us who care about justice and truth will prove useful if and when we finally see civil and, dare a boy to dream, criminal sanctions against the perpetrators. And then his other point is self-amplifying mRNA shots funded by Biden administration headed for American pharmacies. In December 2023, the Biden administration announced agreements with CastleVax, Codagenics, and Gritstone Bio to develop the first three vaccines under Project Next Gen. By the way, this is just a bit of cheap advice, but anything called Project Next Gen is something to stay away from. You know, RFK, if you haven't seen the special show I did with him, because he says interesting things. That line, I think it was the first time he was on the Mark Stein show, and he talked about how Roger Ailes, the founder of Fox News, had been a friend of his, and Roger said, well, we're never going to run any of the stuff you write about, because in non-election years, Big Pharma accounts for 70% of our advertising. That was the first time he was on the show, and so we had him back. And I think it was whatever it was, the third or fourth time he was on the show, RFK Jr., he said, America has the most medicated kids in the world, and they're the sickest kids in the world. And that's true. So just as a word of advice, if there's any health type thing called something like Project Next Gen, you know to stay away from it. But Project Next Gen, according to the Department of Health and Human Services, accelerates and streamlines the rapid development of the next generation of vaccines and treatments through public-private collaborations. What public-private means there, as David Elstrom points out, is that the government generously throws in lifetime immunity from lawsuits. And the reason it's called Next Gen is because apparently the old mRNA vaccines weren't killing off the deplorables quickly enough. So the answer is to develop a vaccine where the mRNA poison self-replicates. Okay, so it's not like they shoot the juice to you and they keep you there. If you get your shot in Walmart or at the local fire station, they make you hang around there for 20 minutes just to check that you don't keel over and die. But they don't really, that's just like, that's the equivalent of TSA airport security theater. Because the thing is, if there's no point hanging around for 20 minutes if they've consciously developed self-replicating mRNA vaccine, so they continuously renew. You're always in the first 20 minutes of them. That's genius. Sylvia and Stephen in Wokingham. Yes, there is a town called Wokingham. It's in southern England, and they've been to see Vax 3, Authorised to Kill, is a film just released from the Children's Health Defence Organisation, that's RFK Jr., which shows the injuries, deaths, hospital protocol deaths, etc. Very moving documentary. Would this film have made a difference to your Ofcom case, do you think? No, because at one point my counsel said, and let's turn to the elephant in the room, which was that the thing that got me taken off the air by the pansies at GB News. It turns out everything that's come out since then supports my view and Naomi Wolf's view. Naomi, by the way, is going to be on the next Mark Steyn cruise. And if you think Naomi's compelling on telly or radio or whatever, she's even more so in real life. But everything that has come out since Naomi and I ran into trouble has confirmed our general view of these things. Everything. They're not safe and effective. You know, I'm going to be the soul of moderation, as our questioner said of Bob Fulford a couple of minutes ago. I'm going to be the soul of moderation. If one is willing to accept that if you're in your late 80s, 90s, upward of that, if you're Jimmy Carter's age, there might conceivably be some benefit, might theoretically be some benefit to these things. But for everyone under than that, in other words, everyone who is at or below the age of life expectancy in Western nations, there is no benefit to these things. And in fact, the danger increases the younger you get. Now, Western governments in America, I believe, is still recommending them for little kids. But I don't think that would have made any difference to the Ofcom case, because when my barrister said, let's address the elephant in the room, the judge interrupted to say that under judicial review, she was no way was she going to issue a ruling on whether or not the COVID vaccines were safe and effective. The question before the court was whether the Ofcom, as a quasi-judicial entity, had the right to convict me for what I said on that show, and in fact had the right to convict me without me having, without me being permitted to defend myself or face my accuser in court. It's absolutely terrible That's like a great loss. And, you know, we've had questions today from people wanting to know about this judge who's criminalized silent prayer in the vicinity of an abortion clinic in the UK. I can't, I'm having a bit of trouble finding the relevant question on it. Yeah, and he, a 51-year-old former soldier, it's from Alison Castellina, been given a 2-year sentence, conditional discharge, and ordered to pay more than £9,000 in court costs because he was silently praying inside an abortion clinic safe zone. And Alison makes a very good point here. She says, surely the secular authorities do not believe prayer works. Surely Christians believe prayer works everywhere, not just within 50 yards of the supplicant. One wonders if it is now time for churches to strategically plan how to handle thought crime legislation. I don't think so, actually, because I think not just on abortion, but I think on a whole bunch of other issues. Silent prayer on certain topics would discombobulate the post-Christian Church of England. But the point about secular authorities do not believe prayer works. They don't believe, they think, as they see it, you're just asking the your imaginary sky god, your imaginary friend in the sky, as these guys would say, you're just asking your imaginary friend in the sky to smite the abortion clinic and put it out of business or whatever. Well, you know, why is that? If you are the secular state, what's the big deal? Prayer isn't anything. God isn't anything. The guy is just thinking thoughts. He's just thinking, he's not expressing the thought, he's just thinking the thought. And as we saw in that story in The Telegraph, the way the law is written in Scotland, it may even be illegal to pray in the privacy of your own home. I mean, this is thought crime. People, if you take the position of the secular state that there's no God, there's no transcendent meaning to our lives in this secular paradise, then you actually are sticking people with 9,000 quid in costs just for thinking in their own heads, which is very weird. And we're getting away. We're getting away in my case and in this one from anything like basic common law principles. Who's this? This Three-Eyed Sam from the planet Wham, possibly not his real name, says, since we're all choking on politics right now, how about some relief by means of a digression into entertainment? Oh, I'm way past entertainment. I haven't been entertaining, I think, since the Michael Mann case began, which is, what is it now, 12 years. Mr. Stein, when you review popular music, your choice of subject seems to be mostly of pre-Elvis roots, with their echoes into recent times. What do you think of more recent pop music? I admit that some of it has been dreadful, although I have a deep sentimental attachment to some rock. But as to some of it, I think it was some writer in The Spectator who quipped that some rock singers sound as if they have their tender bits caught in industrial machinery. When you say more recent pop music, I don't like to live in a museum. So I think this idea that everything that was good was written in the 30s and 40s just creates a sort of generally cobwebbed vibe. So I'm always interested to hear new songs. Because rock is a style. You know, as I always used to point out, Rock Around the Clock was written by a guy born in the 19th century. So all the rebellious teens were tearing up the movie theaters. To a guy who, when he was a rebellious teen, the exciting, transgressive pop music was the Merry Widow Waltz. So I don't think in those terms. And I think thinking generationally is sort of banal. You can do as, you know, I remember Julie Stein, the composer we were talking about on my Saturday show a couple of weeks back. Julie wrote, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, and Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, and all kinds of other things. But he said to me, because he was like, he was talking about some Billy Joel song that he quite liked, but he didn't think, he goes, I quite like rock when it came along because of its freshness, like the Charleston, right? And Julie had been, 20 when the Charleston came out. And to have rock music compared to a dance craze from 1922, I thought at the time, I was like very young when he said that to me, I thought that was completely ridiculous. I sort of see things now like that. And I remember something Elvis Costello told me. We were in Chicago at whatever that big theater is there, and Burt Bacharach was sort of off on the other side of this. We were in this little sort of mezzanine, and Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello were appearing together, and Burt was on the other side just rehearsing the string section for this thing they were going to do, and Elvis Costello was just sort of whispering to me because we didn't want to disturb him. But he said, oh, yeah, he goes, wherever we were the other day, this German guy was giving Bert a hard time because he'd never gotten into rock and roll. And Bert said, well, you know, if you just come out of the army and you're studying composition with Henry Cowell and listening to Dizzy Gillespie, Bill Haley doesn't sound that hip. And Elvis Costello goes, and I can see that now. And so that's what I like are songs you can do in any style, because styles come and go, but are great. So I'm happy to hear, if you want to do a bossa nova version of The Times They Are a-Changin', if you want to do a a disco. I demonstrated that. Somewhere or other. Was it at Hillsdale? How you took a song from, they didn't believe me, from 1914, and we did it in a little rock and roll style. We did it in a bossa nova, and, that's what I'm into. But I like new songs. I'm always interested in hearing new songs. And what I mean by that is the song, not the track, not where some guy with a computer spends 2 hours putting together this great track, but the actual music, the melody and the lyrics on top of it are rubbish. Anyway, that's... I should write about this at length. There's this guy, the York Theatre Company... on Broadway. He's had to quit after 50 years. It's a little contretemps over Noel Coward. You know, you talk about rock. There isn't going to be any rock. In fact, it's hard to hear rock now, whatever you mean by that term. But I'm just saying post-Elvis, post-Beatles, post-Elton John, whoever it was, Whitesnake or whatever, because guitar-driven rock... Hispanics don't like it any more than, in the case of this New York case, blacks supposedly like Noel Coward, which is the reason the guy had to go. It was in a New York Times story. So that if you have demographic transformation on the scale of the last 4 years, you can kiss. It's not just, I can't hear any, aside from my own show and other shows on 7-8 Radio, I can't drive around America and hear any popular music I like coming out of a radio. And that's going to be the same for you Whitesnake fans too. Because... if you have demographic transformation on the scale, try finding a decent rock station as your tootling around the more Hispanic parts of America. You know, there are cultural consequences to demographic. And then, of course, when the Muzzies take over, there'll be no music on the radio other than the Islamic call to prayer, because they don't dig any of the tunes. So it's not just that when you let your countries be demographically transformed, you lose your future, you lose your past too. And what a cheery note to end on. I'm doing myself tittering again. I'm sorry, I shouldn't just be doing this effete. I shouldn't have ended with an effete show tune question. I should have done the old Kamala, men for Kamala. I'm a real man. I'm gonna get me a beer. I'm as manly as Elizabeth Warren. And then I'm gonna sit on the tailgate of my pickup. I'm so manly, I've got a pickup truck, and it's got a tailgate, even if I have to get my wife and her lover to help me figure out how to lower it. And then I sit on that tailgate real daintily with my legs crossed, because I'm a man. And for Kamala. This has been the late Mark Stein. That's going to do it for today. But do stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen's going to round up the internet as only she can. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in. We're so butch. We're way butcher than all those extras from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy making those Kamala ads. So do come on in and join us. The water's fine. And don't forget, for the Stein shy chum in your life, there is a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.